Of fire and vegetable rot. And when I saw the red and white police tape, I started walking faster. The building had collapsed, and tall piles of marble, steel, pale wood, and office furniture lay dispersed among other unidentifiable materials. Beneath the scraps, I could make out the edge of a pit. Places where the earth slanted steeply into itself in the way that lips sometimes slant into the mouths of old people. Three or four servers protruded between the floorboards and whiteboards. Funny, I thought, since the floors had just been elevated in expectation of rising sea levels. A police officer told me that the cause of the accident was unknown, but most likely, given the blackout and aftershock that had awakened most of the street, some kind of explosion in the power supply lines had opened the pit that the building was now sunken into. It had happened late in the night. No one was hurt. His eyes wandered as he spoke, as if he were keeping an eye out for something behind me. Behind his head hung a thick swarm of insects, coloring the sky black above the wreckage. I called my contact at the bank and was sent straight to voicemail. Walked to the nearest cafe and took a seat at the high table facing the window. I was eating a bowl of chili when the door opened and cold air hit the left side of my face. A person came over and sat next to me. I looked up from my chili at his reflection in the window pane. Young man, mid-20s, short, dark hair parted to one side, tall forehead, round, rimless glasses. I could see the street through him. But then again, his skin was also pale in an airy way. "Hey, you," he said, and ordered what I was having. The smell of cafe burger filled the room when the kitchen door opened and turned into sweat on the back of my neck. "Where are you from?" the guy suddenly asked. "Here, actually," I said, looking down at myself. "But I've been living abroad for a while now. What gave me away?" "Your clothes, your suitcase, your glasses," he said. "Everything, just your appearance, really. You're not from here." "Have I seen you somewhere before?" I said, and regretted it immediately, tried to explain that I didn't mean him, but his reflection in the glass, the way I was both seeing and seeing through him. He smelled like eucalyptus and some other kind of aromatic. A big group left the cafe, and then it was empty, like the plane had been empty when I was awakened by the flight attendant. Except that now the waiter was gone too, and it was quiet in the kitchen. "I'm going for a cigarette," the guy said, getting up. "Do you have an extra?" I said, even though I didn't smoke. He grabbed his coat from the rack and said, "Yeah," and I realized that he probably just wanted some air. So damn quiet in that cafe, and that he probably preferred to go alone. "Nice with some smoke out here in the cold," I said. He nodded and looked at me, his face blue white in the frozen sun. I looked at our legs in the window and took out my phone to search for a place to stay. I was supposed to be staying in the bank's guest apartment. That is, in one of the rooms that now lay in pieces, spread among other rooms. "Where are you sleeping tonight?" he asked. I was going to say, at a friend's, but that could get awkward if he asked me the address, and I couldn't remember the name of a single hotel. "I'm not sure yet." "You can crash with me. Everything is booked because of that summit meeting." Neutral gaze. His blank eyes like metal bolts in the cold air. I looked at my phone. "You don't need to check. I'm telling you the truth." He lived in an attic studio off Brelgel. The room had no molding or stucco. Its lines as sharp as the lines of his face when the light was dimmed. It shone from a floor lamp pointed upward, so that the ceiling was covered by a disc sun with two eyes in the middle from the filaments. There was a shower cubicle, a steel sink, a refrigerator and a hot plate, a full-size bed, two chairs, and a trestle desk. The window was small. the cracks around.